Hiya, welcome back to Misadventurous with me, Tiffany Rouge. This is the place you can turn when you need some positive reinforcement that you're doing okay with your life, or maybe even a little bit better than okay. I do that by showing you examples of my life as a millennial trying to carve out my place in the world, and getting real about things that I experience, but also by talking to people and sharing stories of lessons learned that are designed to help you figure your own thing out. This week is a great example of the power of positivity and connection. I have a chat with Dr. Maria Zushman. She is a female powerhouse who is a wellness expert. She's a practicing chiropractor who's built her business from the ground up, a motivational speaker who's built a community of like-minded souls in the Illawarra. She speaks at multiple events helping people find their own wellness, and she hosts not one but two podcasts. One of which she teaches how to be the queen of your stress and to manage day-to-day living and the stresses that come with it. And the other one, she co-hosts a momentum-based podcast designed to help you get the momentum you need to make the change in your life. Both are really cool, and I suggest you go and listen. I'll put links to them in the show notes. Now, I met Dr. Maria at an event called the Wellness Boot Camp in Wollongong, and I just interviewed one of the organizers for my radio show. He suggested that I connect with Dr. Maria because she was local to the Wollongong region, and I was looking for someone that I could meet with face to face a lot. And since then, we've been catching up for coffees and having really stimulating chats about life, the future, and everything in between. I like to think she's taken me under her wing a little bit because she's helped me come up with a lot of stuff for the podcast. And it was with her that I was able to put some of my thoughts into words about getting the whole Misadventurous podcast up and running. And I think it's really important to have these connections, especially when you're starting out and, you know, looking to build new things. You know, the people around you are the ones that are going to help you. And, you know, it's really important to have a support network. I think it's really cool to have someone like her in my life, but it's also really important to me that I'm providing value. Like, it's an exchange. I've always seen development as a bit of an exchange. And often in the past, I've exchanged my time for skills. You know, I did a few internships when I lived in the UK where I'd work for free just to get the radio skills that I wanted in a radio job. And after about 10 years in the industry, I understand that now I'm at a point where I can share my skills and experiences in exchange for other skills and advice. And I feel like that's what I'm doing with Dr. Maria. So while I'm just starting to provide value to you, hopefully, and to Dr. Maria, I wanted to share just how inspirational this woman is. What is the greatest lesson that you've learned from your mum?
Ooh, that's biggie. It's particularly big at the moment because of where she's in her current health state. I think one of the biggest lessons that my mum's taught me is to always have a generous heart. And there's been times where I've probably got that a little muddled because I think you can have a generous heart and still be very strong and stand up for yourself. I would think that's the biggest lesson from mum. And also, it's cool to be a pioneer. Like, my mum was a pioneer back in the day. So she's 81 now when we're recording this. She had a mortgage back in the day where it just was unheard of for a single woman, let alone a single very Asian-looking woman, to actually have been approved for a mortgage. It was unheard of nearly 60 years ago.
Yeah,
probably
wow.
More like 55 years ago, but unheard of. And, you know, she was a head teacher well before she should have been, and all those sorts of things. So I think it's probably part of why, in terms of lessons learnt from watching and hearing about her examples, is that I feel really passionate about leading the way in other areas. I suppose it's probably where my passion for teaching has actually come from, because my mum was a teacher and she very much is somebody that still teaches with her wisdom today. So I suppose I'm inspired by that as well. So probably only in recent times where I admit how right she's always been. I probably don't tell her that quite often enough, but she's a wise old soul, and I suppose it's one of those things where if they say it's inevitable that you become your mother, I don't mind.
Oh,
like,
good.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know some people are like, oh, I will never become my mother. And I kind of look at it and go, well, if that's who I turn out to be, or even a percentage of that, then I think that will be pretty cool. And I know I'll have left a legacy if I only do half as much as what my mum does, because she gives back so much. There's lessons there in terms of having a generous heart, the joy and satisfaction there is when you make have an impact on other people's lives. Yeah, I think that's been a big driving force in everything that I've done, in my, probably even in childhood, but particularly in my adult life.
And is that because you saw your mum doing that, and I guess you saw the effects of how that played out? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I think initially, now with a little bit more maturity, Tiff, is that I can consciously see it. And probably within some of my own evolution, I noticed that now, probably in my early 20s and as I graduated and started my hands-on work, is that I was probably doing it innately through having watched her example. So I was kind of programmed in. Whereas it's probably in my mid to late 30s that I was like, hang on, why is this happening? Hang on a second. and then really being conscious about it. And the more conscious I become about my behaviour, my actions, how I design my life, is the more impact I feel I'm having, particularly in the last couple of years where I think that's been quite exponential. And I see the reach of what I'm doing increasing really quickly, which is very cool. The having people coming and giving us feedback for what we're doing. And sometimes I'll say things very off the cuff that I don't even realise has landed with somebody, and they'll come back and they'll go, you said something that night. I go, what did I say? Because I've probably forgotten. And they said, you said blah, 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 blah. And I went, oh, wow. And I said, what impact did that have? Changed my whole life because of it. I'm wow. like, wow, really? Like, there's a beautiful young lady that I look after in the practice, and I've known her for quite a few years, and, you know, she changed careers because she happened to be working on one of the nights that we were doing one of our live events. And she happened to be on quite a few of our live events, and it was sort of the second or third one that she'd been working at, because the establishment that we were holding said workshop at, right. she was on that night. So she'd asked to be in the room that we were in.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that's why she'd changed careers until only very recently, where she said, that's being in your workshop is what inspired me to actually make a change. I went, really?
Wow.
Like, okay, cool. That's so awesome, because that's like not the intent of why I do the things I do. I hope to deliver value, and I hope to give people the tools that they can make the change that they need to make, whatever that is, because we're all at different stages, right? So it's about enabling people to have the right tools to make change, because mm-hmm. I think that's what I see a lot in what I do, is that people don't have the next right step. They get bombarded with all this information, and helping people being able to digest some of that and simplify it is really powerful.
Yeah. And, like, you've essentially answered my second question.
There you go. Sorry, Tiff, you didn't show me. See, if you're listening back to this, you can see she did not show me these questions. No. That's why I was stuck for words earlier when she asked me if I'd had time to prep, Tiff.
Yeah. Do you know what?
It would have been probably really stagnant and boring.
No, but I love that. And I think that it really just shows how everything all plays into each other with you, and how the roots of it is, you know, your mum and the lessons that she's taught you, and here you are doing your own thing with them. But it's interesting to see that, like, where that's come from.
Yeah. For a lot of people that I've spoken to and that I've been interacting with, I cannot speak for everyone.
Good point. Yeah, yep.
I might try to on the odd occasion, but it's actually not that healthy to try and do that too often. Is that that's very common, is we take on the traits of our family members unless we're conscious to change them, if we want to, or if we're conscious we actually like them, is then to be able to lean into those further to make them stronger and better strengths, mm-hmm. which is very cool. And I suppose that's where, with some of the stuff that I do with Paul and Nguyen, is that from the spiritual entrepreneur side of things, is that it becomes seamless across life.
Yeah.
So when you said all the different things I do feed into each other, absolutely they do, and that's on purpose, because it means everything that I do project-wise is fun to me and it feels inspiring to me. People, I don't have to drag my butt out of bed to do them, because it's like all of the stuff that I choose to do, hopefully, and the intent is it makes a difference in people's lives, which is, I think, kind of cool. And it, as I said, it inspires me. It gets me up in the morning without having to have a bomb under my butt to get me going.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess in a way, like, it's awesome that you are doing what you love and it's you're getting that fulfillment from it.
It's a conversation that I sometimes struggle with people, because they'll say, you know, ask them how their day was. Yeah, I worked. I went, oh, okay. And I say, oh, well, and they'll say, how was your day? Oh, you mustn't have had a good day because you're at work. I went, no, I actually really enjoy what I do.
Mm.
Like, does it always go perfectly? God, no. But, you know, that's being unrealistic. But do I love what I do? Absolutely. And, you know, is every interaction I have with human beings, particularly, say, in my practice, is it always brilliant? No. Mm-hmm. You know, people are in poopy moods or whatever. But overall, is my days are pretty freaking cool. And I think it's really sad when people are stuck doing stuff that they don't enjoy. I understand that sometimes it's a necessity. My hope for people is that they only need to be in it for a period of time till they can figure out what they really enjoy doing. Because even if it's a job that other people might look at and go, oh God, I don't really understand how you can enjoy that. So a lot of people doing a job that you might look at, or I might look at, or we look at each other's jobs going, oh, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
But to us, freaking amazing.
Yeah. And, it's the value that we put on it in our lives and stuff.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about what it was like in your 20s.
Ooh, it's a while ago.
How long? Not too long, I think.
It's a couple of decades ago. How early? Hang on, are we breaking this up into different sections or are we like, is this the whole decade, Tiff? Or?
Just some parts where you were at, say, my age, so 27, what were you doing?
27, I was in my fourth year at uni. So I was in my first year of my master's degree at Macquarie University. So at that point, I was still living at home with my mum. My dad had passed away when I was 23. So I stayed with mum until I graduated.
And this is in Sydney?
This is in Sydney. Yeah. So I stayed in our family home through uni, which was a blessing because it meant that I had probably more disposable income back then than what I probably do now, Tiff.
Nice.
No, not quite. But it was – I had a awesome environment where for a period of time I got to study, and fourth year and my master's degree was interesting. It was a challenge because the workload was huge, but also a great time because pretty sure I thought I knew everything. Yeah, I definitely thought I knew everything. In reflection, I knew very little. As I get older, I realise how little I actually know and how much more learning there is to do. I had a great group of friends. Most, and a lot of them are still my friends today, which I feel very blessed about. In touch with my great uni friends. I was actually chatting to one of my great mates, my best mate from uni this morning. He's over in Fremantle. So we've been friends for how many years now? 17 years.
Wow. And you still keep in contact. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I guess it's an indication of true friendship when you can pick up the phone. Can be a week, it can be a month, it can be, well, I don't think we've ever gone a year without speaking, but you get the gist is we might go a year without seeing each other because of distance, but we just pick up where we've left off.
Yeah, nice.
And same with school friends, so I'm still in touch with a lot of my schoolmates. I don't get to see them as often as what I used to when I lived in Sydney, and there's majority are still in Sydney, so these days I probably get a little bit more naughty blinkers coming back down the big road to the Illawarra. So, so it was awesome. I mean, I loved being at uni. It was a great time. I had very little stress at that point. You know, my greatest stress was when was my next assignment due?
Yeah. And did you have a idea of, you know, were you wanting to sort of open a practice? Like what was on your five-year plan at 27?
Oh, and the irony of that is I can remember having dinner with three of my very good uni friends from when I first started at uni. So when I started uni straight from school, I probably should have had a year off. So first year I really just shouldn't have been there. Second year I majored in first year, and then I actually had 2 years off before then I went back to uni to actually do it properly. And I was with dinner with three of my mates from the first time around. And probably around that time, actually, around that sort of 27 mark. And of the four of us, one of my mates turned to me and she said, "I bet you have a 5 year plan." I went, "No, I actually have a 10 year plan."
Oh,
And so back then it was a bit different to what it was now. It certainly didn't include things like podcasts and being keynote speaker and things like that. But it definitely included practice. It definitely included, you know, a property portfolio, which hasn't quite worked out as according to plan. But it was very structured.
Okay.
So absolutely. In the 5 year plan, it was to get a great associate position, which is how I ended up down here. Actually, I went for a position and got it in Wollongong, and then ended up staying down here ever since. So I had a very specific idea about the sort of position I wanted when I came down at that point, and I still am to an extent, but I probably set my goals up a little bit differently now. Back then I had like a dot point A4 page of like 30 points that I wanted in my first position. And the irony was, I'm not sure if I told you this story, but I wrote that at the start. Did I write that at the start of fourth year or start of fifth year? I wrote a very detailed list to what sort of clientele I wanted the practice to have, what I wanted it to look like, you know, how people within the practice understood what chiropractic care was, all those sorts of things. Like it literally was dot point.
Yeah.
The first point said inner city, as in INNER.
Right.
And in my mind, when I wrote that, I meant inner city of Sydney. Like,
okay.
Because at that point when I was writing it, I was actually going for a job in Leichhardt.
Oh.
As in right in the inner city, inner west of Sydney. And the irony was that job fell through at the last minute. That's how I ended up going for the job down here. About 3 months into my new position, I actually found that sheet. And I went, oh, that's funny. And I literally read every single part of it and it literally ticked every single box, even the inner city, because I was inner city Wollongong.
Wow.
Like, it was crazy. And that's happened a few times. Mm-hmm. You've got to be careful what you write down sometimes, because you'd be very specific as to what you want that to look like. Because it's happened a few times in my life where I've gone, you know, you've written something or visioned something, and then whether it's a manifestation or whether it is, like, literally it's, you know, just kismet, whether it's serendipity, whatever it is, for that to actually come through and you actually read through and you go, far out, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, same thing happened to me when I was thinking, like, going through this whole re-understanding of where I wanted to be in radio, and I decided, so I forever had this dream to be on Triple J.
Yeah.
And I was living in the UK, had made connections with Zan Rowe at Triple J.
Yep.
And had, you know, plans to meet her and to move to Sydney when I moved back from the UK. And I got here and things didn't work out. And I was very in two minds about whether or not I still wanted to do radio. And I just sat down and I thought, okay, hang on. I've been way too specific my whole life, which is just Triple J, and I wouldn't settle for anything less.
Yeah.
And I ended up at the BBC doing some really cool things in the UK, but I didn't appreciate them because they weren't at Triple J. So I sat down and I really thought about what it is I wanted in life. So not just, you know, a career, a job, because I'd never sort of worked in Australia and radio before. And it was a good group of friends living in a capital city and having the job in radio to support the lifestyle like I have, what I have in Adelaide.
Yep.
And I wrote it down one day and I was packing up my life in Darwin, and I realized that I had all that. Like, I was like, tick, tick, tick. Yeah. Hang on a second. I've been living this life that I have intended and wanted for so long, and all I did was just write it down and think, oh, that would be nice, and just be broad about certain details. And I never thought that I would end up in Darwin, but I did, and I loved it. And I definitely never thought I'd end up in Wollongong, but here I am, you know?
What, it wasn't your dream destination when you were writing down this? Come on now, Tiff. It's not that bad down here.
No, it's great.
No, it's awesome down here. Look, I think exactly right. I think when we're designing our life, well, it either can be designed because you actually are conscious of it, or it happens by default. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people go, I don't know how I ended up here. It's because you had no actual input in it. That's why. That's how you end up where you don't understand where you've arrived to. Now, in saying that, sometimes when I've designed things, I've ended up where I wanted to be, but the surrounding elements are looking quite different.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, there might have been certain people that I just always expected to be on a certain ride, and then you get to a point and you're like, yeah, actually that's been for the season reason, or, you know, forever sort of thing. And it's really interesting, because sometimes I've found when I've been setting myself goals or setting myself outcomes that I want to achieve, is at the end I might get there, but it's been way more painful than what I wanted it to be to get there. It's bloody not been a smooth ride.
Mm-hmm.
Other times I get to places very quickly and I go, wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell did that just happen? Like, what just – how do I bottle that and do that again?
Yeah.
And I, again, I think the more conscious we can be of how we actually – what's the right word? Proceeded through the journey, if you like, then you can actually replicate that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
In a way that you kind of, I guess, you're self-aware of
exactly
what you're doing when you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because that whole thing, you know, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey and what you learn from it.
Yeah.
So, like, 100% I agree.
Yeah. You know? And it's one of those things. And look, my brother said it to you in his speech at my first wedding, which... Well, back then it wasn't – same-sex marriage at that point wasn't legal, so it was a ceremony.
Okay.
And my brother, in his speech – God love his cotton socks – I was actually watching him give the speech at my first wedding going, I think this is meant to be nice, but okay, let's keep going. But one of – no, he was speaking the truth, which was, if back then and even now, there's certain things I'm very good at learning very quickly, and there's other things that I'm just a bit of a slow learn for.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point he said something along the lines of, if there's a hard way of doing it, Maria will find it. I like to think that these days I tend to look for the easier way.
Yeah.
I think part of my programming, if you like, from when I was little was I probably was set up to find the hard way sometimes. Like, you know, it was language that was used to me by my dad from a very early age, and not because he meant to make it harder, but, for example, my brother's pretty much got a photographic memory. God,
damn.
Yeah, oh, no, nice. It's cool. Like, he can reel numbers off left, right and centre. It's quite impressive. What it meant growing up as a younger sister and sibling to him, I like to think I have an okay intellect. But am I, as, if I was doing an IQ test, would I have the same IQ as my brother? Probably not. So my expectation for my parents was that it was always that if I wanted to go to uni, I'd be going to uni. And I can remember the language my dad would use as we were going off to watch soccer on a Saturday afternoon, his soccer team that he'd follow. And he'd go, you know, you can always do whatever you want to do. You're just going to have to work harder than your brother.
Wow.
That was his language. Like, if you want to do it, you're just going to have to put in a bit more effort. But you can do whatever you put your mind to. And what's interesting is probably what I took a hold of as a kid, I'm just going to have to work harder.
Yeah.
Versus I can do whatever I put my mind to.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it took me a while to hear that message clearly so that I made a change as far as that was concerned. As I said, I'm not certainly not perfect at it. Sometimes I look back at things and go, yeah, you probably could have found an easier way to get that done.
Well, I'm a firm believer that when you like for me especially, if I haven't had to work hard for something, I don't appreciate it.
See, that's an interesting frame to have.
Yeah.
My suggestion to you would change that up, because why does it have to be hard?
I'm not quite sure. I think these days, maybe in terms of like, maybe not working hard, but like struggle, right? Like if I've had to struggle through something, I know having been through it, I guess, and maybe that's just who I am in my life. Having had these opportunities at the BBC and at XFM, and they came onto me, like they were just on a random whim. I used I just went up to people and started talking to them, and I got all these awesome opportunities. And I didn't take them in, and I didn't actually utilize them like I should have, because I wasn't, you know, to me, I feel like they came easy.
Yeah.
And now that I'm working hard to get where I am now with the podcast and with in radio and everything like that, I've had to work damn hard, and I appreciate every single moment of it.
But do you not see how through those, my suggestion to you is through the opportunities that you feel got handed to you, which I think is probably doing yourself a disservice, because you obviously wowed some people that they went, this chick's got potential. So in saying that, well, it came easy and I kind of just winged it and I got it, I would imagine that there was probably somebody quite wise who went, she's got something, like she's got an X factor, or she's got a great voice, or whatever they needed for that particular moment. So you might have actually been fulfilling somebody else's need at that time. But the other part of that is, if you hadn't have done those things, would the opportunities that you have now have been presented to you?
True. Yeah, I don't. Probably not, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, I think it's an interesting one. Like, some people really do, and I used to do it unconsciously, was set myself up for struggle. I always used to set myself up that I'd be second place. It was a real moment, and I used to try and fit in, and I really have, I've just owned it now. As I said, I'm a slow learner about some things, is that I was never designed to fit in to a cookie cardboard cutout like all the other kids that were local to me growing up, or even now being down the South Coast, is that, you know, the more that I own who I am, it just makes things easier. And for me, ease and grace is something that I think is really important, is that to be humble, to have an ease in my life, it makes it more peaceful and more joyful versus, I mean, you even say the word struggle and I actually cringe, because I'm like, that sounds painful. Why would I want it to be painful?
Yeah,
like,
right.
if you got handed two roads you could go down, and one was one that everything just came to you with ease and it was heading you in the right direction, or one you had to jump over landmines to get to the same outcome, which one would you want?
I feel like I would definitely want to choose the easy one.
Yeah.
But I think being 27 and recognizing that, I think everything's telling me right now, all the media that I consume, is like, you're 27. You need to be working hard so that your life can be a little bit easier later, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm of the adage that if you can work smarter, not harder, it's more fun. B is, who are you trying to prove to? Do you know what I mean? Like, when I'm saying that, when I first graduated from uni and I was working as an associate in the practice, which then I effectively was helping to run, is, you know, I was working 60, 70 hours a week.
Mm.
It was stupid. It's part of why my first marriage broke down, is that we were working way too much. And it was to the point we were grunting at each other at various points.
Wow.
And at that point, you know, were we having financial reward for it? Sure. Do we do very wise things with it? No. But so we weren't even really seeing the rewards of that hard work. And it even make you can probably see it. You can't see it listening back, but Tiff can see it. Is that it's making me cringe. And at the time, I thought I was doing the right thing. On our Momentum Architects podcast, we actually did a whole thing about work ethic and what we define it as,
mm-hmm.
and where we got that definition from. So, for example, my work ethic came from, or what I used to think was amazing, was my father's work ethic, where he worked 7 days a week. He was a Hungarian refugee. My dad would have been in his 90s now if he was still alive. He worked his ass off to send my brother and I to some of the best private schools in Sydney so we could have what he didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think that was amazing because he was doing that all for us. Like, it was very much my dad's drive was us. And the thing about it was made him sick, and he was dead by the time he was 75. So it's that sort of trade-off of, well, yeah, it was amazing, and it achieved a certain goal, but I didn't get to spend much time with my dad. I didn't get to spend time with him as an adult. Like, I'd love to be able to – my dad was a great businessman.
Mm.
I'd love to be able to run questions past him, or, you know, just even cash flow questions and things like that now, but it's not possible. Does that make sense? So I guess it's a choice we can all make. And again, you said in terms of what I'm bombarded with in all the media that you're watching.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that need to hustle or grind it out or to do whatever is, if you love it and you're inspired by something, then I actually don't think it should be a struggle. Like, I look at the work that I do and I don't actually think I do that much.
Mm.
And then people go, what are you up to at the moment? I go, oh, so I've got the practice and I've got the podcast and then we run the retreat and then we've got this, this and this going on. And they go, and you don't think you're doing very much? I'm like, well, no, because I love doing it, it actually makes me sit in a space of expansiveness. I have to be careful not to then go into explosiveness, but it's it's so expansive is that I don't find it a struggle. Are there times I'm busy and I might get tired and I need to just check out for a minute to check back in?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But I don't see it as being a struggle. Because to me, struggle is not sustainable.
Do you know what, though? Like, my last thing, right? What advice would you give to your 27-year-old self? You've answered it. Every single thing that I've put down to write to speak to you about.
Comes with being an old, wise human. No,
you've
I'm just
actually
kidding.
I've
got so much more to learn. And as I said to you earlier, no, if it was one last thought to my 27-year-old self is that always stay a learner, is that always start with a beginner's mind, because the times that I've thought I've known stuff, oh, reality comes and smacks me on the ass or the face. Let me tell you that for free. So the moment you think you're just getting into that smooth sailing is, and I guess it's becoming complacent with things where you think you know what's going on, is just remain in that state of a beginner's mind. And exactly that is, struggle's not sustainable. So why put yourself in that position? And keep having fun with what you're doing. Because if it gets too freaking serious, that ain't fun and that's not sustainable either.
And in your dad's case, it's what killed him. So you got to enjoy your life while you're
absolutely
hustling and grinding.
Yeah, or enjoying and succeeding.
Yes.
Maybe, and again, I'm very conscious these days of the language that we're using.
Mm.
So if it's always a grind and a hustle, that's exactly what it's going to be for you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what if it could be fun, successful and easy?
Such inspirational words and really a very, very wise question to post at the end of that. If you live in the Wollongong region and you want to check out Dr. Maria's practice, there's a whole bunch of links in the show notes, but you can always follow her on Instagram. She's at Dr. Maria Z, or the Queen of Stress on Instagram. Or you can follow her on Facebook. She has a really great group called Your Inner Edge with Dr. M, where she's very active and great for keeping you in check with mindfulness and positivity. So you should definitely go and join that group. And if you've loved anything from this episode, I'd love it if you shared it with a friend. I have these chats to help you live a more enriched and fulfilled life. And if you take anything away from it, it would be really cool if you help someone else take something from it too. So please, if you could just tell one person about this podcast, if you're feeling it, and if you're really loving it, you can always leave me a review on iTunes or on Podchaser for you Android listening folk. Okay, till next week, see ya.